I'd like to do is I'd like to meet the man who invented comments on Microsoft Word.
The Chucky Changes thing.
Yeah, because everything I do, every piece of writing I do in my life, whether it's a book, an article, whatever, children's story, comes back to me covered in these flipping comments from people.
It is annoying.
And I want to meet that man, and I want to kick him in the and then I want to shout at him, there you go, chummy, track that change.
Not that you're worked up about it or anything.
No, I'm fine. I'm good.
Anyway, have you got that off your chest now?
Yeah, I'm good now.
Can we get on with the show?
Oh, okay. Hello, everybody. Welcome to episode 50-something, 57 of the Mid-Faith Crisis Podcast. My name's Nick Page. I'm joined, as ever, by Joe Davis.
Hello.
How you doing?
I'm really well, I think. Yes. Are you? Well, you know.
You've been very busy, haven't you?
It's a busy old time. There's no doubt about it. And it's a busy time, I think, probably for everyone, isn't it? Let's face it. And as we always say every year in our typical bar humbug way, the thing about Christmas is you're way too busy to celebrate Christmas. You know, around churches, you always hear people going, oh, what's the, you know, people should remember the real meaning of Christmas and all the rest of it. But actually, you don't have time.
No, it's just an annoying interference, really.
But happy Advent anyway.
Yeah, and you. I advented. I tell you what, I preached a couple of days ago on the second coming.
Did you?
Yeah, I did. We should definitely do a podcast on the second coming.
Yes.
On the end times.
Yes. Let's do it in the new year.
The realm of nutters.
It is.
It really is. And we should do that. I mean, a mid-faith crisis.
I know.
The end times would be fun. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, we should do it. Let's do it right at the beginning of next year, because nothing says Happy New Year better than looking at the end of all civilization as we know it.
Yeah, it's true. And it's coming anyway, if you believe
the
news.
It is coming. The rapture is on its way.
Okay, so that's going to be the first episode of the new year.
Shall we?
Okay, I will gen up. I need to know more.
We don't want to do it before Christmas, because Christmas needs a Christmassy bar humbug episode.
It does, yeah. And that's coming next.
Yes.
No, not that. Okay. Not as in not this week, but no. Just before Christmas. No.
Well, I think that's been a tremendously professional opening.
Isn't it? Well done, us.
Anyway, how are you?
I'm all right. My mother is going to be 93 on Friday. God bless her. And she's been very poorly. So,
sorry to hear that.
Being the only son in the locality, we moved her from Gillingham a few years back. So, seeing a lot more of her, which is good, I guess. but it's it is
such a euphemism.
I'm gonna say it's quite a lot of added pressure. But you know, I'm sure. Very grateful to have her around, and I wouldn't want to be without her. So. How about you? How are you? What have you been up to?
I've just been, just been writing stuff and heads down. It's a very busy time. I am, seriously, I mean, the rant, you know, like...
You've been receiving graciously all those comments from
people. Well, I've talked about this before on the podcast, you know, how I've never, ever said thank you for your feedback and meant it. But I think, you know, I've got a goal. I've identified my goal really for next year is to get beyond contradiction. I think if I can get to a point where basically nobody can question my judgment or work... I think that's achievable.
Oh, absolutely, Nick. You're almost there.
Hashtag goals. Anyway, there we go. Yeah, but apart from that, I'm all right.
Okay, now, moving back to Advent, and, you know, we did briefly say, you know, is too busy to do anything. Advent. How do you do any rituals? Do you do anything to sort of help retain a sense of what the season is all about?
No. I mean, obviously at church we do, because I, unlike you, I, you know, actually...
You're a Christian.
I actually am a Christian, and I go to a church. So we have it. I think we try and pay more attention, because actually, obviously, it's the funny thing about Advent, it's the beginning of the church year. So this the year, Happy New Year to everybody in ecclesiological terms,
because
that's really where it starts. The story starts here, as it were, with the you know, moving towards Jesus' coming. So. But I don't have anything particularly I do. I'm very bad at actually all that ritual stuff. How about you and your cult? Are you, you know, Do you move into a time of sacrificing pigeons as opposed to sort of rats or something?
No, we sacrifice turkey. But apart from that, there's no specific ritual.
Is this a way of justifying your cheese boards, which we'll hear more of as well? In your eyes, is that just a sacrifice?
The cheese board is very much a part of the liturgical year.
Bring a sacrifice of cheese.
Cheeses shall take the highest honour. Yeah, exactly. Yes, etc. I follow the Brian Draper read. Brian Draper, do you know Brian Draper?
I do know Brian. I've met him once or twice.
He's a very lovely man who said he will be a guest on the podcast. And,
very good. We should do that.
And I love his readings. Very gentle, very simple, but very, very profound. And you really sort of join in with this little online community and travel through Lent and Christmas. He does them twice a year. So that helps me. And the sort of initial thoughts have been around stars and things. And this morning, did you see the moon and Venus this morning? It was absolutely fantastic. It was so clear and wonderful.
I only saw my coffee cup this morning. That was all I was interested in looking at.
Yeah, fair enough.
Moon and Venus.
Oh, it was incredible. Now, you see, the listeners will know what I'm talking about. You're just a, Philistine, as we've said many times.
Anyway, well, look, we should get on because we have an interview this week.
And we do.
With a guest, Mark Scandrett. Really interesting interview. Yeah. But we've got a little bit of feedback first.
Sure. Okay. Well, let's romp through these then. Okay. So we've had a bit of feedback. The first one is from Pete. Pete said, "Hi, Joe. My favourite film of all time is Saved. Jenna Malone, Mandy Moore and Macaulay Culkin. What could go wrong? It's set in a stereotypical American Christian high school with a stereotypical high-octane pastor. Jenna Malone plays Mary, who discovers her boyfriend is gay and decides Jesus has told her to cure him, with inevitable results. Mandy Moore is Hilary Faye, the prissy star of the worship band, and Macaulay Culkin is her brother, who is confined to a wheelchair. Add in Eva and Noro Martino, I can't say that, as Cassandra, a rebellious Jewish girl, and all the elements are there to challenge the stereotypes to hugely comic effect. It's a beautifully and sympathetically done film. Yes, it mocks, but there is humour, tenderness, and ultimately hope." I didn't know that film. Do you know it?
No, sounds good.
So that's Saved.
Okay.
And then the scientific advisor to the show, Bethany, has written in. And she said, amongst other things, she said, "I'd like to mention Wicked. It is a made-for-TV movie starring Emma Thompson and is based on a Pulitzer Prize-winning play of the same name. The story is simply about a female professor of literature dying of cancer. She dies slowly and painfully and becomes aware of how the literature she studied professionally, John Donne's poems, are part of a human experience that she had missed. In the midst of her suffering, they become something new. She's also faced with the questions of meaning, value, achievement and worth that are brought into focus by the approaching end of her life. It's a hard film to watch that does not valorise or glamorise dying, but it is also deeply redemptive and human. I think it is Emma Thompson's best performance and it's sad the movie is so little known."
Gosh, if that's the best performance, that's like saying something.
I was going to say, I love Emma Thompson and I don't know this film. So.
No, I don't know.
Wow, thanks for saying.
We'll try and find them and put some links on the website and on the show notes as well.
That's good. Yes, you're good like that. Thank you. Okay, so let's just do one more. Glyn says this. "I really enjoyed the film episode. More, please." He says, "Yes, American Beauty is one of my faves. Ditto Three Billboards, plus also Magnolia and a French subtitled film, La Veuve de Saint-Pierre, The Window of Saint-Pierre."
The Widow.
Widow. Sorry. Oh, that would be La Fenêtre. Surely, of De Saint-Pierre, which is a different film. No, this is definitely, you're right, it's The Widow. Where surprisingly a man gives his life for another and he says it's beautiful.
Okay,
so
great.
Sorry, shall I say the name of that again? It's La Veuve de Saint-Pierre, which is The Widow, and not, strangely enough, The Window.
The windscreen of St. Peter.
Okay, let's get on with this interview.
Yes, so set the scene for us.
Okay, so Mark Scandrett is an amazing American guy, speaker, author, and a guy who just experiments in spiritual formation. He runs labs here, so I'll let him explain what that's about. But I met him in Houston speaking at a Renovare conference. He's based in San Francisco with his wife and children. He's a really interesting guy and lovely man. You know, he walks the talk, a genuine guy. So hope you enjoy this.
I am delighted to say that I'm joined today on the Midfaith Crisis podcast by none other than Mr. Mark Scandrett. Hey, welcome.
Great to be with you, Joe.
Hey, it's so good to have you. Mark has been a friend for some years. I think we met, did we meet in Houston?
We did.
At the Renovare conference.
Yes, in a bar.
Yeah. And even then, your charisma, red glasses, and love of drinking drew me in. So where have you've just come from the States, or have you been abroad?
I was in Bristol for a few days doing a retreat and speaking at Woodlands Church in Bristol.
Cool. Yeah. And you speak around the globe nowadays, don't you?
I do. Australia, Bangladesh, the UK, France.
Well, and so I'm assuming that our listeners are not too familiar with you. So tell us a bit about the books you've written.
Sure. I live in San Francisco, California.
Yep.
I founded an organization called Reimagine, and we're very interested in integral faith practice.
Okay.
And so we create labs and retreats and workshops that help people integrate spiritual wisdom to everyday.
Yeah, no, I love this language of labs. Tell me what a lab is.
A practical space for exploring spiritual wisdom in a group encounter where we take on exercises, practices, and I like to think and have it create an authentic environment of a lot of honesty and transparency as part of that.
Okay, so what would that look like typically? Would you be going after a certain thing, like getting people to not worry, or to how would a lab typically work? Yeah. What sort of practices might you engage in?
Sometimes we start with human need, like I feel stressed, I feel busy, and then we'll look at, particularly for me, the teachings of Jesus and say, how does Jesus invite us into a deeper reality that addresses this need that we have, or this ache that we have, and what practices might we take on together that might help us experience fuller flourishing?
Superb.
I used to call it the Jesus Dojo back in the day.
What's Dojo?
Dojo means place of the way.
Okay.
So one of my beefs with Western religion and Western Christianity in particular is that it tends to be mostly about esoteric ideas and theology or doctrine.
Oh, yeah.
Propositions that don't connect with experience or everyday life. And in more Eastern spiritual paths, things have to be practical. There's something to do in response to what you're exploring. And I think Jesus taught as a Eastern wisdom person, so he was teaching about real life.
Yeah.
And if we're going to really understand what he was trying to communicate, then we have to adopt more of a posture of experimentation.
And
experiential practice.
Right?
Yeah.
Oh, good. And books. Tell us about...
Yeah, I wrote a book. Most people have forgotten, but it's called Soul Graffiti, and it was a really beautiful, poetic sort of spiritual biography that came out.
Okay.
It had a New York...
I don't remember that one.
New York publisher.
Yeah?
Came out in hardcover back in 2007.
Yeah. So what was the book I bought from...
You probably bought a book called... The second book was called Practicing the Way of Jesus.
Yeah, that is exactly the book I bought.
And it has a bright red cover.
Yeah,
and it's about the Jesus Dojo.
Yeah,
like the understanding behind it and stories of people doing that together. And then I wrote a book called Free: Spending Your Time, Money on What Matters Most.
And that's a book on simplicity.
Yeah.
Yeah.
On alignment, I would like to say.
Okay. What do you mean by that?
Aligning your time and money with what matters most in light. And also considering global sustainability.
Wonderful.
And then Lisa and I wrote a book, my wife Lisa and I wrote a book together on integral family life. It's called Belonging and Becoming.
Yeah.
Creating a Thriving Family Culture.
Love that book.
And we had a great time writing that together and accompanying families on that journey. And then the last couple of years, I've been working with a group here in the UK called Life Words.
Yeah.
On some resources around the Beatitudes.
Yes, indeed. Yeah. And we reconnected again over that.
Yes.
I was in your guinea pig group.
Yes, when we were just developing it. I think it's way better now than when we were in our group.
Do you think so? The group that I destroyed.
Yes.
So for the benefit of listeners, we did this group practices around the Beatitudes. Yeah. Every week we're looking at a Beatitude. We're learning how to integrate the wisdom of that into our lives.
Yeah.
And we're on the last session. Mm-hmm. And we've gone deep together. I mean, we're sharing openly
week
and honestly
after week,
our hearts.
11 weeks.
And we're using this thing called Zoom. So it's like Skype, only you can see all nine or 10 of us.
Yeah.
You can see all of us. We're doing this group chat online. And it was the last one. And you know what? It's like you all have to sort of turn up in the chat room at the same time.
Yeah.
And
we usually, there's a couple minutes of banter.
There's a little bit of banter. And then someone responsible like you will say, we're going to start now. And you'll do something.
And then we really talk about what's going on in our lives and what we've learned and realized through the practice.
So on the last group. You know, I think I'm here a bit early.
Well, first of all, maybe I should tell my side of the story first. The last week, Joe doesn't show up.
Oh, yeah.
And we're like, we wait. Okay, I guess we'll move on without him. And then halfway through, or actually almost at the very end of the call.
When you're going deep.
When everyone is
vulnerable
in this space.
Sharing.
Yeah, deep vulnerability and sharing. Joe shows up wearing red glasses.
Like yours.
Yeah.
Saying that I'm going to market them.
Yeah.
So I basically burst in on the scene with a whole tirade of trivia and junk and banter. And suddenly I look at the screen and think, you guys aren't laughing so much.
Yeah.
There's clearly people in tears. And
and we're like, so you show up an hour late.
And destroy the mood.
Yeah.
Kill it. Because you selfishly put the clocks forward.
No.
No, that is true.
No, the UK put the clock forward.
No, you did.
No,
don't you blame me.
No, I think the UK does it a week earlier than we do.
Well, that's not how I remember. Anyway, I was very hurt.
But I've learned from that. So at the end of October every year, I look very carefully at the time difference between London and San Francisco.
I'm sorry, that's a bit indulgent. But it is genuinely one of my most embarrassing moments. I mean, there's so many, I don't know where to draw from, but that was not a good one.
It's become one of my Joe stories.
Great. What, just one? Yeah, anyway. So, listen, we've been doing some stuff on the podcast recently. We've been talking about personality and spirituality. And we've been reflecting together and you know, with the audience, with the people who write in with us, on how much personality affects spirituality, how much it affects denominations and it affects churches, how churches take on the personality of the leaders, blah, 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 blah. And I know you're pretty well versed in the Enneagram as well. And we've been dropping hints about the Enneagram, but you found that really helpful over recent years.
Yeah, I became familiar with the Enneagram about, I don't know, 12 or 14 years ago.
Sure.
And I think we'd had a couple of groups that did a little bit of work on it, but our main thing with our labs was trying to help people identify spiritual practices that would help them experience greater wholeness in their life and integration. Mm. And along the way, we realized, the practices that are meaningful are determined based on your personality.
Right.
And your issues and your
course.
Struggles and your blind spots have a lot to do with the specifics of personality.
Yeah.
And in fact, we used to do a lab we called Awakening Creativity. And we would invite people 1 week to say, come next week. We're going to have a professional photographer here, and we want you to present as you would as your false self. Or if you're not aware of your creator's care and presence, what do you look like? Bring props, a costume, and then we'd have the photographer take a portrait. And then the next week we would say, come next week prepared to pose as your true self. If you're living fully aware of your belovedness, the safety of living in a world where you're cared for, what does that look like? And I have hundreds of these photos. Wow. And most of the people, even if they weren't familiar with the vocabulary of the Beatitudes, of the Enneagram, nailed their Enneagram type.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
They
personified it.
Isn't that interesting?
Yeah.
So very briefly, again, for people who aren't familiar with the Enneagram, in under a minute, how would you describe what the Enneagram is?
I would say it provides a vocabulary for talking about basic human fears and longings.
Okay.
And that each of us have a particular kind of sensitivity to certain things.
Hmm.
For many Christians, the Enneagram is related to the three temptations of Jesus in the wilderness. So he was tempted in every way we are, and he was tempted in terms of ego esteem, power control, and safety security. And those are the three energy centers of the Enneagram typology.
Okay, so say those three again.
Ego esteem,
yeah.
Power control, and safety security.
And that's where our fears are often located, in those three
centers.
So and some are more dominant and some are less dominant.
And so the Thomas Keating would suggest, who just passed away recently, who's the kind of the father of contemporary centering prayer movement.
Okay.
He would suggest that when we came into the world, when we felt the coldness and the aloneness of feeling hungry, waking up and having no one there, we started to create a story about ourselves to cope with that kind of sense of lack. And that helped shape it kind of shapes your personality, and we fixated on certain things like either one of those three energy centers. I don't have enough safety. Maybe as a message that some people believed, or I feel out of control. I'm going to make sure I never am out of control again.
Okay.
Or I don't know who I am,
and
I want to know who I am. And so it sort of sets the trajectory
your personality.
Of your personality.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's nuances to that, three different directions you could go with any of those three energy centers. So there's nine personality types.
Yeah.
It shouldn't be a tool where we use it like a parlor game
and
decide who else.
Guess who, what number someone is on the Enneagram.
Yeah. And so what I tell people, because there's some people who are skeptical. In fact, I was teaching on it in London a few years ago, and some people were afraid of it because there's a symbol with it. It looks like
it's very occultic.
Yeah.
We're cool with it on this podcast. That's all right.
But I would tell people, but there's other people who aren't afraid of it. They're just annoyed by it.
Yeah.
Because so many people are into it and they don't want to be typed. And so
especially fours like Nick and you.
I don't mind being typed. I don't think that's a four thing.
You're still special.
That's
there, right?
Yeah, that's a Nick thing. But I'll tell people, don't just think of this as a vocabulary for us being able to talk about our humanness.
Mm.
What are we afraid of? What do we long for?
Mm. And
how can we become more whole and live more fully in coherence with reality?
And what's great about this and what you were saying before that is that, you know, to be a part of a group or a church even that is just doing one spiritual practice is, well, A, good that you're a part of a church that's doing any spiritual practices, point number one. But point number two, it's unlikely that one size fits all, because the spiritual practice that you really need to engage in your actual life, not at church, but in your actual life, is probably going to be entirely dependent upon your personality.
Yeah. So there's a personality type in the Enneagram typology called the investigator type five.
Yeah.
And they tend to want to feel competent about their understanding of the world. So this person's really great at studying things.
Yeah.
Probably good at studying scripture and nerding out on theology.
Nerding out, that's an expression, I love it.
Or certain teachers that they're into, or the history of a certain tradition. And their growth edge is not going to be more time in study or thought.
Yeah, of course.
Their growth edge is in engagement with people and in the real world.
Right.
So that's call it the killer app.
Okay.
You know, for an Enneagram.
Okay, so let's just make this personal. We'll talk about sevens, which I am. Yeah. So what are the weaknesses and strengths? And what are the practices, I guess, for a seven, would you say?
So what I love about sevens, which is the name is the enthusiast, is that you love to throw parties.
Yeah, we do.
You love to convene people. Uh-huh. You love to curate experiences for others. And you're always up for an adventure.
Okay. So glad Rachel's not here.
And that's a real gift to the rest of us.
Yeah.
You know, like
exactly.
Yeah. I've already been today gone on a walk to the beach, been taken to a pub for a drink and had a cheese plate. Yeah. And we're not done yet.
No, we're going to Thai food soon. What's your point?
Yeah. So there's a script that says, I don't want life to be boring.
Mm.
And I spend a lot of time anticipating what's coming that I can look forward to.
Yeah.
And so it's a future orientation.
Sure.
The shadow for a seven is that maybe even at a subconscious level, there's a fear of being present in this moment.
Yeah.
And of having to face what's inside.
You don't want to be in a moment where there could be pain, right?
Yeah. So avoiding pain becomes a major motivation.
That is very true.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that thing you fear about being in the present and being without resource, if you could sit in it, you would discover a comfort that you haven't been able to discover by always looking forward to the next thing.
Sure. Yeah. So the spiritual practice for a seven
would be to, I think, put limits on the partying and to face some of those hard things.
Yeah.
And I relate this also as well to the Beatitudes, because there's a...
Yeah, it's now talk about that.
Yeah, so there's nine Beatitudes and nine Enneagram types. And I think that... you know, each of them gives a window to what's real, and also suggests that there's something that a challenge we have to living in the real world. So for you, avoidance of pain is your challenge, right?
Yeah, sure.
So the second beatitude is, blessed are those who mourn, for they will be comforted. It's the hardest thing for you to do.
Yeah.
But if you would be willing to sit with your pain, to not numb out or distract yourself, you would discover a source of solace, or you possibly would discover a source of solace that will be your salvation.
Yeah, but then again, I might not, so let's not do that.
So a friend of mine is also a seven, and his spiritual director told him, the next time you want to get up and go do something, because you... you know, some fun activity or contact somebody, sit for 15 minutes in the discomfort of that.
Wow.
Breathe deep, practice centering prayer if that's in your vocabulary to do, and see what happens. And if maybe, hopefully you find out, the present moment's okay.
Yeah.
And it might help guide you better if you can listen to what your heart's really saying.
Mm. So you've worked with Life Words around the Beatitudes, and that's how we reconnected again.
Yeah.
More recently, working on that. So do you want to say something about the Beatitudes?
Sure. So they were interested in doing a project around the Beatitudes.
So let's start simple. I mean, just in case there are people listening who don't know, what's the is a Beatitude? Where are the Beatitudes?
So the Beatitudes are a list of 9 short statements at the beginning of the Sermon on the Mount, which is Matthew, a gospel writer's best sort of collection of the sayings of Jesus.
Yeah.
So if you want, if it probably is our best access to the kinds of things that Jesus traveled around teaching, but it's in a collection together. Sure. And I think that those first statements kind of give almost like a table of contents for the areas of human experience that Jesus is addressing through his life and message. And one way we've looked at it is that Jesus is, with those 9 statements, he's naming the illusions or distortions that keep us captive and calling us back to what's most real and true and inviting us into a new way of life.
Wow. Right, so give some examples.
So I'll give you one other lens on it. This is the one that I think for the connection with the Enneagram is the most interesting. There's what I would call instinctual postures we have towards life.
Okay.
Blessed are the poor is the first beatitude. When I feel like I don't have enough, my first instinct is to grasp and grab, to live close-handed, to live in anxiety, stress, and worry. This would be called our fight or flight response.
Yeah.
And that was developmentally necessary. When you came out of your mother's body and it was cold and you were hungry, you needed to feel that, right? But if we stay at that level of consciousness, freaking out, am I gonna have enough? We fail to grow or mature.
Sure.
It becomes that instinct becomes toxic.
Yeah.
And so I think with the Beatitudes, Jesus is inviting us to move from those first instincts that were necessary can become toxic into a new posture, a new level of consciousness. So I need to go from that grabbing hands of desperation to open my hands and live with a sense that I have enough and I can be grateful for it and I am cared for and I can be generous with what I have.
Wonderful.
The Beatitude we already mentioned, blessed are those who mourn. Our first instinct when we encounter the pain and brokenness in the world and in ourselves is to run away.
Yeah.
Numb out, escape.
Yeah.
And
get a decent addiction.
Yeah. And the extreme form of this is an addiction.
Yeah.
And the ways that we try and self-soothe actually become the problem.
Yeah.
Right? And so with tremendous wisdom, Jesus is saying to us, you did have to encounter the brokenness that's in the world. It's true. Mm-hmm. But your response to it of running and hiding, maybe it was important. Maybe when you were 2 or 3 or 5, that made sense. But now the self-soothing has become the problem.
Yeah.
So sit with the pain and you'll find a deeper source of strength and resiliency.
Wow.
This one's interesting. The third Beatitude is, blessed are the meek, for they will inherit the earth. So our first instinct, and this is how we develop our sense of self, is by making comparisons. Mm. Who's the strongest, the smartest, the best looking? And we measure, am I a good student or a poor student? Am I as good at sport or less good at sport? And is my family better off or less well off than her family or his family? And this corresponds to what psychologists call identity theory, comparison theory. That's how we start off trying to build our sense of self, is by comparing.
Yeah.
So, but again, it becomes toxic Because if I spend my entire life basing my sense of self on being better than other people, or feeling diminished because I feel less than, it's not a reliable sense of identity. And so the Beatitude invites us to move from that mindset of competition and comparison to realizing actually each of us has innate dignity and worth. We are each beloved, created in the divine image. And my sense of self can be rooted in that original blessing or belovedness, not in anything that I earn or achieve.
Wow.
So it's a really...
I kind of want you to go through all nine now because it's so good, Bowie.
Are we running out of time?
We're running out of time. Yeah, I know. Well, you know, I have a very short attention span.
Yeah.
Things could get painful when I need to run.
But it's fascinating to think because when I teach on this, people are able to say, I totally relate to each of those first instincts.
Yeah.
And it feels like such an invitation to move into a different consciousness about those things. Yeah. So broad stroke, what I like to think of is that with his teaching, Jesus is inviting us back into reality, away from away from our distorted perceptions.
Yeah.
And those distorted perceptions are what are multiplying misery and difficulty in our lives.
And I think Dallas Willard said, you know, another name for reality is the kingdom of God, or the kingdom of God or reality. But, you know, that's...
Yeah. And so each of our personalities has a... We have a superpower, meaning we're very perceptive or connected to reality in some ways.
Yeah.
And then there's probably one of those areas that Jesus identifies in the Beatitudes that's the place we've become most blind or struggle the most to believe that this is true.
Yes.
Yeah.
Indeed. This is fascinating. If people want to find out more about this, have you written anything? Where can they go?
So there's a couple of resources that are out now. One's called the Ninefold Path Notebook.
Yep.
You helped us workshop that.
I did.
And it's a small book of reflections on the Beatitudes that get at these themes, but in a real simple way.
And it's been great. And I have to say, we used it in our, you know, we run a cult here in Worthing that I help. and
it's only a cult if you're making money.
Yeah.
So I don't think you can call it that.
No. Oh, man. Anyway, we loved it. We really did love going through that. And the embodied prayer, we even did that.
Yeah.
Even though we're British and we're obviously very uncomfortable with doing actions.
So it's real simple, but it gives people an opportunity to really talk on a deep level together.
Yeah. How can people get hold of that? It's not on Amazon, is it? It's through LifeWords.
Yeah, so if you go to ninefoldpath.org,
great,
you can order it. And then there's a group guide that goes with it called the Ninefold Path Learning Lab that has everything that's in the notebook, but it gives you suggestions for 11 two-hour sessions.
Wonderful. Yeah, good.
A lot of folks have used it and found it really helpful. And then I'll probably be working on, or I am working on, a larger treatment on these themes.
Great. With the Enneagram
With the Enneagram.
I would love that. We would love that. If people want to get in touch with you, get hold of you, how would they do that?
You can go to markscandrette.com.
Wow.
markscandrette .com. That's a good place to start.
And get the book free and get the other book, the one on the families, if you're a family person. What was that called again? Sorry,
Belonging,
I should know
and becoming.
That because I read it. I saw a pre-published issue and read it. Oh, I can't remember what it's
and called. I'm in the UK a couple times a year. So I've been doing a series of retreats and retreat days based on the Ninefold Path material that have been a blast.
Great.
And we do it really experientially. So it's a lot of people say this is like nothing else I've ever encountered before.
Yeah. Well, Mark, I love hanging out with you.
Yeah.
I love that you're all about the transformation and you're great fun too. So we got to go have some Thai food now.
All right.
But thank you so much for taking time.
Yeah.
I know it's been a busy schedule to come down Worthing. record this podcast with me. Really appreciate it.
It's great, great to be with you.
Bless you, mate.
Peace.
We'll speak to you soon.
Great. That was Mark Scandrett and Joe. Yeah. And I do love that story about you inappropriately entering the...
It was genuinely one of the most embarrassing moments, you know.
So was it a visible thing?
Yeah, it was. No, we got Zoom, oh, so you're like Skyping to nine different people. And okay. I thought, as it's the last one, I'm going to do this real funny. And I had these red glasses just like his. And I just went in, you know, on full Joe overload, set to 11. You know, and I just stormed in with the, hey, I'm going to be selling these glasses. They're available. Mark Scandrett glasses, blah, 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 blah. And then, you know, just that strange thing. Oh, that's odd. Everyone's here, which is unusual when we're in. But I do beg to differ. It was them that changed the clocks, not me. It was, I turned up on time.
Which is difficult, isn't it? I remember at one of the Renovare things doing, we used to do this thing at the beginning of each session. Where you do, you'd place an item on the altar and you'd update people on how you were.
Oh,
you know?
I like that,
And the and you tell your story about how you'd been and you were there. And so I thought, oh, well, I'll open with a joke. So my opening line, the first thing I said back on this Renovare course after not seeing all these people for ages was, I opened with, well, the lust problem's still as bad as it's ever been. And you laughed and nobody else did. No, and I realised... Oh no, they think it's all serious.
They just tilted their head to one side.
They just prayed for
Thanks for sharing.
I have to say, actually, the lust problem is as bad as it's ever been anyway, so there we are. So it wasn't a lie. Anyway, I thought that was a really interesting interview. I loved the emphasis on reality, although I think some of the, you know, my Englishness was kind of coming out in some of the sort of phraseology of it. You know, but I just loved that he bringing it back to... What's really going to help you in your life? And he talked about Jesus as an Eastern teacher. There's a big movement in Jesus studies which looks at Jesus as a sage, as a teacher of wisdom.
Yeah.
And of course, you know, Jewish wisdom is practically based. It's about how to live your
life. Exactly. Yeah.
And so it's not about, you know, doctrine and theology and all this bits and abstract theories. It's all about what is really going to help you. So I thought that was very
I think that's always been an emphasis in Renovare, and certainly with, you know, Alexander Shire and his stuff. And I think that's what we all hunger for. I mean, none of us really are wanting more head knowledge or information about Jesus or God or anything else. What we want is wisdom on how to live our lives, and that wisdom is there in the scripture, there's no doubt about it, but sometimes it just needs a little bit of help mining those depths.
Well, I think it's
easier
sometimes to pretend it isn't. So he was talking about the Beatitudes. I remember years ago having a talk with someone. I'd preached on it and thing, talked about how mourn meant mourn. You know, Jesus said, "Blessed are you who mourn." It meant those who are grieving, and the person I was talking to, the curate, was saying, "I don't think I think it means that people who mourn for their sins."
Right.
And I said, "This is utter tosh." Jesus did.
That's very restrained of you. Well done.
It's almost like we don't actually want it to be real. We want it to move away from there.
Yeah, sure.
We perhaps because he didn't feel the church was up to that job of helping people who are actually mourning.
Yeah.
For people they've lost. But I think the church is up to that. And, you know, and Jesus has more than enough wisdom to help us with that. So I found that the emphasis on moving to, you know, reality. Mark said Jesus invites us back to what is real and true. And I think that's a very good
I love that.
Line.
Yeah. I really
I agree with that wholeheartedly.
Now, I just want to say, I know he talked about the Enneagram, and some people are a little bit sniffy about the Enneagram because it's a bit trendy and in, and it just does seem to be that everyone suddenly is talking about the Enneagram at the moment. Really, I think the important thing is just that for the sake of your ongoing spiritual journey, you know, and I think often in mid-faith crisis, people have got a little bit disillusioned with church or Christianity, or, you know, perhaps a bit disappointed with their life, I don't know, but the emphasis of the Enneagram is doing the inner work, you know, and it's just a tool. If you don't like it, don't use it, but it's just a tool to help you understand yourself, your strengths and your weaknesses, and how you relate to the world. And I've found it enormously helpful. In fact, next year I was wondering whether we might ask Dave Tomlinson to come and do a day for us, for those interested.
I think that'd be great. He talked, Mark used this phrase, he said it's we should view it as a vocabulary to talk about our humanness. And I think that's all it is.
Yeah.
You know, and
exactly.
I don't think it is a way of sort of trapping you or, you know, pinning you down or anything like that. It's a way to get you talking about who you are and what drives you. And in his language, what are you afraid of? What do we long for?
Yeah.
How can we be made whole? And and I also liked the whole emphasis on growth edge, which that's slightly, you know, trendy term. But most of us don't really want to go near that growth edge. We actually we want to get better at the things we're already quite good at and we enjoy doing. We don't actually want to confront the things that will really help us grow.
For sure.
So. I think anything that is going to call you away from the cheese board for a moment is surely a good thing.
It probably is. The cheese board can become a distraction in my life from pain.
So I really like
that. And I'm not even joking.
No. So anyway, thank you for doing that interview. I mean, there's lots more we could say, but we don't want to make this massively long.
No, but I'd love to know what people thought of it and what they found helpful from it, if anything. So do fire off an email to joe@midfaithcrisis.org. Love to hear from you. And send us an email anyway, just to say Happy Christmas. We'd love to hear from you. And I will send one back to you.
Great. So as we said at the beginning, we're at the beginning of Advent. You asked me very kindly whether there were practices that I do to get through this. I'm not really aware of anything, but are there exercises that you kind of would recommend?
I definitely would. And I think if you just take one theme from Christmas, and there's so many depths to plunder in the Christmas narratives, but just the idea of light in the darkness and the hope that in the darkest moment, in the darkest moment of your life, a light is born. It's not the end. There's light in the darkest dark moment, and that light will get brighter. And that's why I think Christmas is situated at this time of year, as you know. So I think that to light a candle, you know, before bedtime, or even first thing in the morning, if that's easier for you, but, you know, switch the telly off early or the radio, sit, light a candle, switch the rest of the lights off, and just allow what is to be with you for a little while. Name it. Say it. If you're frightened, name what you're frightened of. If you're happy, name what you're happy about. If you're sad or experiencing, you know, mourning in some way, name that. But just if you can give yourself the gift of a few minutes quiet every day in Advent, I think Christmas can be a very special season. And particularly this dark time of the year, which often people joke, but they, you know, they struggle with. They struggle with the fact the light's gone.
I'm increasingly struggling with it.
Yeah.
I think.
Light a candle.
Well, I'm going to do that. Good. I don't often take your advice because it has led me into many, many even darker places. But I think that sounds very wise advice. I'm going to try it because I've been so tired recently and so, you know, worn down. And I need that peace. I need that space. And I think particularly at this point when there is so much anxiety and uncertainty in our country and everything going on, you know, what's going to happen.
Yeah.
Put that away. Light a candle.
I think the great routine, which is if your practice is just kind of watch telly until you're really tired and then just head off to bed, try and get that little exercise in between those two things. Don't end the day with TV. End it with a bit of stillness. You might sleep better as well.
Yeah. Unless, presumably, you're watching a Steven Seagal film. which case, that is very meditative.
Unless you just come back to it from a church meeting and you need violence.
We established that last time.
Yes.
So give yourself either the gift of a candle or the gift of Stephen.
Yeah. Or Bruce.
Or Bruce or any other hitty person. Anyway, thank you very much for doing that interview, Joe. That was great.
Great pleasure, as always.
Thank you, everybody, for listening. Do get in touch. If you like the podcast, please recommend it to a friend. If you hate the podcast, please recommend it to an enemy. That way we win either way, and that's good. So we'll be back in a couple of weeks with our
Christmas special.
our Christmas special. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, and we wish you all the very best in the lead up to the busy season.
Yes.
God bless you all.
Yeah. Bye.